content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anika Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the online Glamour magazine. Well, welcome back, everyone. We have a lot in store for you today, a lot of interesting articles. And the first one we're going to start off with is, what on eating collagen? Is eating collagen the secret to great skin? Putting collagen on your face has long been the talk of the beauty industry, with lotions and treatments promising smoother, brighter skin. Now, with the rise of the food as medicine movement, people are buzzing about ingesting collagen via pills and powders. A record number of foods and supplements infused with the stuff, from snack bars to elixirs, have hit the market, and sales are expected to be up by 32% this year. Jessica Wu, MD, a dermatologist in Los Angeles, noticed the trend when her patients brought home collagen products from Europe, saying they made their skin look better. "That's when I started looking into the research," says Dr. Wu, who found early studies to be promising enough that she recommends collagen supplements to her clients. Soon enough, A-listers got on board. Celebrities and their makeup artists began talking about it, says Dr. Wu. Indeed, Jennifer Aniston has said a collagen-infused smoothie works from the inside out, adding to her glow. Collagen is the padding that gives your skin, bones, and joints the strength, structure, and cushioning they need. Smile, and collagen provides the elasticity that lets your skin plump back out. Bend your knee, and collagen, containing cartilage, acts as a pillow for your bones and joints. As you age, environmental factors including sun, stress, and pollutants like cigarette smoke can cause collagen to degrade, and declining estrogen levels in your mid-30s make your body produce less of it. When collagen breaks down faster than your body can make it, your skin loses elasticity and may begin to wrinkle, particularly where your skin is the thinnest, such as around your eyes. Makers of collagen food products say ingesting collagen, which is usually extracted from the bones or skin of cows or fish scales, can restore the body's diminishing supply. But does a daily dose really work? Several studies have shown that downing collagen can reduce wrinkles and improve skin elasticity. A 2018 meta-analysis in the British Journal of Sports Medicine found that collagen could help reduce pain in people with osteoarthritis. And a small 2008 study from Penn State University found that collagen supplements may reduce joint pain in athletes. Still, many experts are holding out for more research before recommending collagen supplements, especially since the products are not approved by the FDA. When you ingest a collagen supplement, your body doesn't take that collagen and put it directly into the skin or joints, says Rami Laundrie, a registered dietitian at the Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Like any other protein you eat, collagen is broken down into basic building blocks called amino acids. Then your body reassembles those amino acids into many different protein structures, of which collagen is only one. As a result, eating more collagen doesn't necessarily cause your body to make more collagen, explains Laundrie. Instead of pricey supplements, Laundrie recommends eating foods known to boost collagen production. Lean proteins, unsaturated fats like avocados and olive oil, and colorful fruits and vegetables, particularly tomatoes, which have antioxidants that can fight off environmental damage. Whole grains and nuts also contain antioxidants that can both amp up production and protect existing collagen. If you want to try collagen supplements, Dr. Wu suggests products that contain hydrolyzed collagen or collagen peptides, which are smaller and easier for your digestive system to absorb. If you're going for marine collagen, make sure the label says it's mercury-free because too much mercury can be toxic. And watch out for added ingredients like sugar, which can cause collagen to degrade. Dr. Wu notes that one of the most important things you can do is safeguard the amount of collagen you do have. It doesn't matter how many drinks or supplements you're ingesting if you're not protecting your collagen from being broken down, she says. Wear sunscreen daily and use a retinoid cream at night, which has been proved to increase collagen production. And don't forget to drink water. Says Dr. Wu, the more hydrated you are, the plumper your skin will look. All right, we have another kind of health-related story. After 40 years of hell, heaven is migraine relief. What I live with, excruciating, ice pick to the eye headaches, have plagued me almost as long as I can remember. But a breakthrough in migraine treatment finally brought me to the holy grail of relief. This is by Jill Johnson, February 26th, 2019. The sun had barely risen when the ringing of the phone sliced through my head like a circular saw. I struggled to open my heavy lids, instinctively jamming the heel of my hand into my right eye socket, trying to knock out the searing pain. It was my usual desperate attempt to block the assault of light from the window, a plea for migraine relief. Still clutching my right eye, the epicenter of the pain, I reached for the phone with my other hand. Hello, I uttered, struggling to quell a wave of nausea. It was Maggie, my Munich modeling booker, who had given a 22-year-old, ancient by fashion standards, a shot. I'd landed a booking for Adidas, a big gig, but I had to be there in 40 minutes. I couldn't screw it up. Okay, I said meekly, not mentioning my migraine. I knew she would see any illness as a flaw, like a receding chin or laugh lines. I also knew how much skepticism people have about headaches, even this agonizing variety. My own brother used to taunt me, "You're making it up. It's not that bad." My bionic arm. Oh, excuse me, hold on. Only those who have experienced a migraine get it. It's a gutting pain, one that can't be measured or observed, except by a stream of tears running down my face, or the way I used to lie on the kitchen floor, writhing, my temple pressed against the cool linoleum. There is nothing simple about what happens in the brain during a migraine attack, says neurologist Jessica Ailani, MD, director of the MedStar Georgetown Headache Center in Washington, D.C. Multiple areas are affected. There are changes in brain electrical activity, changes in blood flow, and a release of chemicals that cause irritation around the brain. At the same time, the trigeminal nerve, the nerve that causes normal sensation in the head and face, switches on, sending signals deep into the neck and into the brain that migraine sufferers often mistake for back pain, Dr. Ailani explains. As the attack progresses, pain, often emanating from behind one eye, confusion and fatigue may follow, she says. And to top it all off, the pain brings with it waves of nausea and a grating sensitivity to light and smells. Although it felt as though my right frontal lobe was being scraped across a cheese grater, I managed to get myself dressed that morning, swallow a few saltines and tea, and stumble onto the U-Bahn to get to my chute. In between fake smiles, I sat on a track bench with my head between my knees, praying not to upchuck on my crisp white running attire. It was hell. My migraine started when I was 8, before I was even really old enough to know what was going on, other than the fact that my brain seemed to be imploding inside my skull. In my 20s, the attacks matured into brutal menstrual migraines. By my 30s, migraines were hijacking my head 5 or 6 days, my head 5 or 6 days a month. And now in my 40s, they haunt me a few days a week. 38 million Americans know my pain. The thing about the multi-pronged ambush that migraines stage on your brain is the fact that it's wildly difficult to treat. It's hard to target everything at once with medication, except by shutting the whole system down, says Dr. Elani. Since you can't just pass out if you need to get to work or pick up your kids, that's not exactly a practical solution. This often leads to taking medication that treats only part of what is happening, or taking it too late and then it doesn't work, she says. In my decades of dealing with the vicious pounding in my skull, I've tried just about everything to get it to stop. I cut out alcohol, soy sauce, balsamic vinegar, chocolate, aged cheeses, overripe bananas — banana bread is bad news — bacon, pizza, gluten, down pillows, crack of dawn flights, exercise, ponytails, hats, movie theaters, dinner parties, social small talk, sleeping in rooms over 70 degrees, too much screen time. The list went on. I tried every over-the-counter medication, the equivalent of jumping into a bullpen armed with a toothpick, every available prescription drug, useful only once an attack had already brought me to my knees, and every natural tincture I could get my hands on. Ironically, most herbal concoctions actually gave me migraines. I tried acupuncture, mouth guards, osteopathy, Reiki, massages, and a migraineur's fave, banging my head against a wall. At best, I found little relief. In the 90s, pharmaceutical companies released a class of drugs called triptans, which helped significantly with stopping migraines once they started, but still no magic pill existed to prevent them. That didn't stop doctors from trying all the options available. Faulty-brained folks like me could be prescribed antidepressants, anti-seizure meds, and beta blockers, all pills for another purpose that patients had accidentally discovered reduced their migraines. I was throwing an entire arsenal of drugs and therapies at the problem, but none could shove the bully in my brain aside. Instead, they unleashed insomnia, jitters, weight gain, fatigue, uneven brows, and a near nervous breakdown. I felt like I was living my life in purgatory, always waiting for the next blow to my head. The cure. I thought I would be forever doomed to this migraine-induced hell, but recently, science, praise you, science, has delivered a breakthrough to those of us desperate to leave our days of writhing in pain in dark rooms behind. In 2017, my neurologist, Peter McAllister, MD, medical director of the New England Institute for Neurology and Headache in Stamford, Connecticut, told me about a promising new drug. Researchers had discovered a specific peptide released during a migraine episode, part of a chain reaction that triggers that ice pick in eyeball pain. Ice pick in eyeball pain I'd been trying to eradicate for 4 decades. Dubbed a CGRP blocker, the drug travels directly to the site of this pesky peptide and stops the booger in its tracks. This is the first preventive drug designed specifically for migraine, says Dr. McAllister, who was a principal investigator on the studies behind the development of the drug. The beauty of this drug is that it has very few side effects. In that way, it's night and day from older preventative drugs, he told me. Only one issue. The please let it be a miracle drug wasn't yet available. I held my breath for 6 months fantasizing about the new life I might have, as I had every time I heard about a potential cure. I would spend time with my kids every morning instead of hiding under the damp towels they fetched for my head. I would enjoy a vacation without inevitable hours spent locked in my hotel room, whimpering after the blows of another migraine. I would feel the simple bliss of being able to take a yoga class or leisurely swim without pain the next morning. Then it happened. In May of last year, the FDA approved the first CGRP blocker, Amgen's Aimovig, Aimovig. And it was as if heaven itself had opened up. Cue the chorus of angels. Ah, I tried to manage my expectations. It might not work for me. Until this point, nothing had. But when my first cooler pack containing the drug arrived last September, I could barely contain my excitement. Aimovig works by preventing migraines from occurring through monthly self-injections with an easy-to-use device that looks similar to an EpiPen. At my kitchen table, with my kids curiously eyeing my science experiment, I injected my thigh with a syringe pre-filled with the clear magical medicine. Then I waited, finding relief, finally. I keep my migraine journal on the top drawer of my nightstand. It carries the trauma of years, marked out in cruel X's on migraine days, and the scribbles of a frustrated detective. Avocado, brisk walk uphill, stressful week, dinner out, feta, too much sleep, sushi, some jerk changed the thermostat, not enough sleep, rain. Here, I would know whether I had finally found relief from years of migraine hell. In the first month, the jagged X's marking migraine days dropped from 12 to 4. It was the best month I'd had in a decade. My second month using Aimovig was even better. Just as studies predicted, and by February, I had only 2 migraine episodes. Both were minor. I've done yoga and a spin class, eaten pizza, stayed up too late, gotten up too early, and gone on vacation, all blissfully pain-free. The newfangled auto-injector makes administering the monthly shot easy, and the sting is a minor nuisance in a new ritual that has me falling to my knees and thanking the medical gods for changing my life. I have a patient who had a vomit bag in her car, and she would throw up while driving when she got a migraine, said Dr. Elani, who is a consultant for Amgen and Novartis and a prescriber of Aimovig. That was normal for her. It's shocking how much people will put up with. But you shouldn't have to throw up in a bag in your car. You shouldn't have to give up time with your kids. You shouldn't have to go to the emergency room in pain. As I revel in my nearly migraine-free new normal, I keep reminding myself not to take it for granted, ever. A friend who is going through a rough time recently started a gratitude journal. writing down three things she's grateful for each night. I decided to start one too. It sits on top of my migraine journal in my nightstand, and every entry begins, "I'm grateful that I did not have a migraine today." All right, in our last article is, here's how to get out of debt no matter what got you into it. While most Americans, yes, most, have some amount of debt, it's women who are stuck with the largest share. New research finds that women owe more than men when it comes to credit cards, medical bills, and student loans. We owe almost $400 billion more in student loans than our male peers, to be exact. But it's not impossible. We spoke to experts about how to deal with debt in some of the areas that can hurt women most. From divorce, to loans, to job loss, here's how to face the bills and devise a plan to get your finances back on track. If you've had a medical emergency, on average, women owe 10% more in medical bills than men do. The reasons are complicated, but from endometriosis complications to a broken bone, hospital bills or ER visits, visit fees can add up and lead to debt. But Carolyn McClanahan, MD, who started her career as a physician and now a certified financial planner, who runs the financial planning group Life Planning Partners, Incorporated, wants people to know that those bills shouldn't always be taken at face value. The first step to fixing medical debt is to ask for an itemized bill and make certain the bill is correct, she says. Medical bills are riddled with errors, and you may be charged for services you did not receive. The next step is to negotiate. One leveraging tool can be offering to pay in cash. The provider will often charge you less than what they will charge the insurance company if you have the cash to pony up. Also, make sure you look into all payment plans and financial system options. Many hospitals have programs to provide help to those with limited financial resources. The hospital will require detailed financial information, but the cost reduction can be significant if your request for help is approved, says McClanahan. If you've gone through a divorce, after a divorce, the average woman's income decreases by more than a fifth and can take a while to bounce back. One factor that can contribute, your debt as a couple. It's common knowledge that assets are divided during a divorce, but fewer people know that debt gets split up too. So if your spouse racked up debt while you were married, you could be stuck with some of it even after you've split. But whether or not you'll have to shoulder that particular financial burden, it's important to think about what new expenses you might now have before you agree to a divorce settlement. Ivani Ramnani, Director of Financial Planning and Wealth Management at Francis Financial Incorporated, emphasizes that a settlement is a negotiation, and women should consider what they'll need in both the immediate and more distant future to feel secure. If you need a few years to polish up your job skills or kickstart a new business, make sure you're planning for it, Ramani says. Ask for supplemental spousal support in the first few years, which typically means getting less later on, so you can meet any additional expenses for getting your career back on track without going into debt. Or, if you're planning to stay at home with your children or have opted not to return to the workforce for other reasons, fight to get a larger share of the assets instead of more alimony. This gives you a more dependable cushion and thus more control of your finances, she says. And remember to pay attention to legal fees. As Glamour has reported, some attorneys will take a flat fee to handle your divorce, while others charge per hour. Make sure you find the right lawyer for you and your budget. If you've maxed out your credit card debt hit a record high in the United States in 2017, with the Federal Reserve reporting it surpassed $1 trillion, and a recent report from Experian found that the average household owes almost $17,000 in credit card debt. If your bills look too daunting to tackle, experts recommend starting with a simple budget. The exercise will determine what kind of expenses you can handle while paying down your debt as quickly as possible. Parse your spending to look for places to save, or download a budgeting app that will do some of the hard work for you. After you've outlined your monthly expenses, Priya Malani, a partner of Stash Wealth, recommends a little bit of math. Take a look at how much credit card debt you actually have, and then calculate how much interest you're paying, she says. If you have $20,000 in credit card debt, each year you're spending an average of $35,000 to $5,000 extra in interest. Excuse me, that's $3,500 to $5,000 extra in interest. Sometimes actually knowing that number and using it as a scare tactic for those who can't stop making big purchases can be a big motivator to curb your spending. If you're ready to make a life change, there are a lot of tools to help. Credit Karma, Bankrate, and Financial Mentor offer easy-to-use debt repayment calculators to help you map out your plan. You can also reach out to your creditors to negotiate payment terms and advocate for a lower APR, annual percentage rate. If that isn't possible, consider whether you can consolidate your credit card debt to cut back on interest. One of the easiest ways to do this is with a balance transfer card, which offers an introductory 0% interest rate on the amount you transfer to your new card and tends to have a low APR for the first year of use. Some of the highest rated balance transfer cards include the Chase Freedom Unlimited and Capital One Saver One Cash Rewards credit card. Warning: read the fine print. These cards can still charge you a small transfer fee, such as 3% on the amount you transfer. If you have student loans, when it comes to student loan debt, there are more programs that can help you than you might realize. If your student loan debt is primarily or entirely federal debt, the first question to ask yourself is whether you may qualify for any loan forgiveness programs, says Janet Alvarez, the executive editor of Wise Bread. One example is public service loan forgiveness, which forgives loan balances after 10 years of payments for public sector or nonprofit workers. Many law and medical schools also offer such programs for their graduates. And some companies will now help employees pay down their loans. Research found that 4% of employers provided student loan repayment assistance, while 8% of companies with 40,000 or more employees offer the service. Usually they're bigger companies. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week. Thank you.